morning. It's Wednesday, July 22nd, 2020. I'm David Ellis with you up until 2 o'clock today. My producer is Michelle Brathwaite. There's going to be somebody else with us today as well for the entire program. That person is Dr. Ronnie Yearwood. He holds degrees in political science, sociology, and law. He's currently a lecturer at the University of the West Indies, Cave Hill, a qualified lawyer in Barbados in England and the British Virgin Islands. He's also a Freeman of the City of London Solicitors Company. Yearwood is a Chevening Scholar, a National Development Scholar, and Overseas Research Scholar. He attended the University of the West Indies, the University of California, Berkeley, and the University of Newcastle and the Hugh Whitting Law School. He's practiced in international finance and banking law. He also has experience in the World Trade Organization law, holding a doctorate in international economic law and having worked, published, and lectured in the area. Dr. Yearwood has public policy experience as well, having worked in the Prime Minister's office here in Barbados, specifically with the research office looking at the Caribbean Single Market and Economy Implementation Unit and the National Committee on Cultural Industry. So he has quite a wide range of interests. And good morning to you, Dr. Yearwood.
Good morning. Morning, David. How are you doing?
I am well. We are going to be talking for the first hour today, you and I and members of the public, with the COVID czar, Richard Carter, who is here to answer some of the questions that you may have for the first hour. And welcome to you, Mr. Carter.
Good morning, David. Good morning, Dr. Yearwood. Good morning, rest of Barbados.
Very good morning to you. So let me start the ball rolling with a couple of questions. The latest comments that you have made are captured by a release from the Government Information Service, Mr. Carter. It says, Barbadians have been given their final warning. Obey the protocols or face sanctions, which include the closing down of businesses that do not comply. Now, there are a number of people who may agree with you, but I've heard quite a number of others who have reacted negatively. They say whenever you hear the czar, it sounds as though he's got a bull pistol or something which he wants to use to whip people into shape. Why is it that he always comes across as though it's punishment rather than positive reinforcement? What do you say?
I say obey the law. Simple as that. Obey the law, obey the protocols, protect the life of your friends, your fellow citizens, yourself, and be in compliance with the law. Nothing that I have said is outside of those narrow boundaries. The Governor of Barbados has instituted a number of protocols. It is still in a public health emergency, and those protocols have been given the force of law under the emergency directive. And all I've been asking people to do is obey the law, or if you fail to obey the law, face the consequences that are also there in law.
To what extent would you accept that part of what you are experiencing has been caused by mixed signals? That when Barbados went through the process of wrestling the COVID-19 to the ground, so to speak, there was a message that seemed to have come from government itself that we had been so successful. And therefore, that, to a large extent, has given that signal. People are even talking about the fact that government officials have not even been wearing masks in public. And that, how on the one hand can you be telling the public to obey, but on the other hand, the signal that is coming from those in authority, including yourself, because I've seen somebody talk about that as well, you're confusing people. That's what they say.
Okay, so first of all, there can be no confusion about obey the law. because the law is there and it is there in black and white. Secondly, in relation to the perception of relaxation, at the very time that the Minister of Health announced to Barbados that he had good news that we had reached zero COVID-19 confirmed cases in Barbados, I believe his very next comment was, we are not out of the woods. We still require Barbadians to scrupulously observe the protocols. At every event, public event since then, the message has been the same. We are not out of the woods. We will have further cases of COVID-19, as has proven to be true. You are still required to observe the protocols of the government. So there's no ambiguity. There's no lack of clarity there. In respect of public officials not wearing masks in public, the current emergency directive does not require the wearing of masks in public. It requires the wearing of masks in certain specified circumstances, and those are set out in the Act. So if you see Richard Carter walking along Broad Street without a mask, Mr. Carter is not in breach of any regulation because there's no requirement so to do. The event or the activity that you refer to, I don't really want to talk about myself, but it has been raised publicly, so I will do so. So the event where I was not wearing a mask and talking to, I believe it was two other sports officials. If any of those two sports officials or the journalists who took the photograph were contacted, they would confirm that this was a posed photo after the event had ended and after I had actually been proceeding to walk out, and they asked, come back and pose for a photo, pretending to be making a point. The mask was worn entirely during the event and was only taken off when I gave the address. I can't speak for other public officials in terms of their not wearing the mask, but I will say finally this, pointing at someone else is no excuse for your own lack of compliance. So therefore, if someone is going to tell me that I am going to fail to protect my own life and protect myself simply because I saw someone else not doing it, that seems entirely illogical to me.
Dr. Yearwood, any comments, any questions?
Well, I think there are two things here. And I guess the first one is to say what may seem illogical to one person is another person's logic. And we have to understand when we're dealing with the public, we have to try to unpack that as much as possible. And there's probably merit, David, in your proposition that there were mixed signals. And the reality is when you're dealing with the public, you have to be very careful in sending those signals. So while we can appreciate everything that Richard you said, which is fair, you still have to understand that perhaps what may come over as logical and clear, set down as a protocol and a rule, but when it is presented and rolled out to the public, there has to be a certain sensitivity to how people will respond. Yeah. And the other point here, not to move on, but the other point here, then should there be consideration? This is a broader question, that masks be made mandatory in public. Should we just move to that next step, or what is the reason for not moving to that next step?
You want to respond to that, Mr. Carter?
The government of Barbados has, from the very onset, even before we had our first case, from the very onset of the implementation of the COVID-19 response, followed the advice of the public health officials in Barbados, who have basically been considering all of the evidence internationally and advising the government on the basis of that evidence and on the basis of the science. Whenever a recommendation comes from those public health officials that mask wearing is to be made mandatory, then it will be. So I am not going to second guess, as some other persons in Barbados of varied or zero technical capacity have done. I'm not going to second guess the public health officials who have managed the COVID-19 pandemic in Barbados thus far, and whose advice we have taken and whose advice has brought us to the point where we are. It is their advice that the government of Barbados takes, and it is their determination as to whether or not A protocol or X protocol is to be implemented.
Right. So my complaint about the coconut vendors without masks selling coconut water and jelly and talking to each other and that sort of stuff, that's not valid. Because according to the public health officials, they see nothing wrong with that. But for me, watching it, I'm very concerned about it.
I am not sure that the public health officials have said that they see nothing wrong with that, because if you look at the public health directive, it requires mask wearing of persons who are vending, who are selling fruits and vegetables, who are engaged in either public markets and who are selling. So your complaint, which I did hear on radio about the coconut vendors, they are supposed to be wearing masks because they're interacting and engaging with the public, and they're selling what could be constituted fruit, vegetables, or generally engaged in vending.
Okay, let's take another call. Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. You have the COVID czar with you, so he has an hour with us. So let's make wise use of this time. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
I haven't got much time myself, but I'm so glad that I'm gone this morning. I want to commend our government. I want to commend everyone who has been at the forefront of this time of COVID-19. And I want to say that I am absolutely 100% proud of our czar. I love our czar. I love his voice, his tone, his demeanor. He is the perfect person for the job at this time. When you look at him, when you watch him on television, when you listen to him, it drives home the seriousness of this whole situation that we are in. This is not a joke. It is a serious life or death situation. You cannot come with any namsy-pamsy sweet voice on this. I have friends in Germany, China, US, Canada, Cayman Islands, who have said since March, I've been in contact with them, and they have said they are so proud to be Barbadian. Oh, if they had that kind of leadership in especially the US. So thank you, Czar. Keep on with the tone. It is the right tone. This is a life or death situation. Thank you. Have a blessed day.
Any comment, Mr. Carter?
No comment except to say that while some people may find the tone that I use or the language, Dr. Yerwood commented just now on the perceptions of people, while some people may find issue with it. The fact is, as the caller said, we are communicating about a very serious life or death matter. And as we speak, the government of the management of Texas are lining up, and our Arizona, I believe, are lining up refrigerated trucks to take bodies away from because they have too much stress on the morgue. As we speak, we are seeing countries reversing some of the relaxation very close to us here in the Bahamas, for example. So essentially, we are dealing with a serious matter, and we are simply asking people to treat the matter with the seriousness it deserves. Barbados has not invested perhaps as much as $50 million in terms of its COVID-19 response, building the center at Harrison's Point, all of the testing that is being undergone, all of the persons who are deployed in the field. We've not invested all of that money to have some people come and wreck it all because they are prepared to flout directives that are there in law. We are not prepared to sacrifice any more lives. We've already lost seven. we're not prepared to sacrifice any more lives simply because people are uncomfortable with some of the things that have been put in place.
Okay, let's take another call. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, welcome.
Good morning to the Tsar and to Dr. Yearwood. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Good morning.
I have spent 37 years of my life working in travel and tourism. And I wish at this point to commend the government of Barbados and to commend the Tsar, Mr. Carter, and also to specifically mention the Minister of Health, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Bostic, for the firmness and the serious tone they have brought to this situation. We in Barbados claim that we are educated, and I know we are. We just have to refer, Mr. Ellis referred to Dr. Yearwood's experience and qualifications. But we've got some people in Barbados who are irresponsible, and I use that word advisedly. Near to the area where I live, there are a number of nightclubs and so on. Some have remained closed, but there's another one where people were walking up in true Barbadian language. And I don't know how you can walk up and walk back at social distance. So I am listening for any outbreak that is likely to come. So I am waiting and listening because I have some plans to travel that are contingent upon the clearance from the government of Barbados and our neighbors, including, and when I say neighbors, I use the diaspora as it's commonly called, Canada, where I have relatives living who I need to see. I would love to see them before the end of the year, but I'm prepared to wait until next year. So I thank you for the work that you are doing and continue to do it. Do not let irresponsible people wreck the work that is being done in this country to protect our lives. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hello. Good morning, Ms. Ellis, Tsar, and Dr. Yearwood.
Yes.
Morning.
Listen, Tsar, but I love you bad. But I want you to get some of your men around in the Bushall area to, for their vans. The van men still doing the same thing and the passengers. I went up the road Monday. And I saw so much vans and people without masks. That ain't funny. And that thing happened Monday. Yesterday evening, I was sitting down outside the house, a lady where, how much people in the van had on masks? She tell me the youngest boy I had on one is the conductor, little boy. I want to do something about them, man. Them the vans that is travel on. And it is peeping them before I get in. So, Tsar, keep the good work up. And Dr. Yearwood, I can listen in.
Dr. Yearwood.
Thank you.
Any comment from you based upon what we've heard from some of these callers so far?
I think what we're getting here is, and it's right, the government has done an incredible job in controlling and addressing COVID, and we are thankful for that job, and praise is due where it's due. But as you have also pointed out, and some of the callers have also pointed out, and I'm sure Richard would agree with this, there are moments of inconsistencies or there are moments of lapses and these things, and that's why programs like this are important. That's why it's important to have feedback from people, because that's where you can see where the actual policy, when it hits the ground, what's happening. You can see here from this gentleman, this caller, the issues with ZRs and enforcement of the policies and wearing masks, whether from the end of the drivers and the passengers. So I guess the question to Richard is, how do you go about correcting the situation, given that the fact that people still need to travel on public transportation?
You want to respond to that?
A quick response from me, because I don't want to take up time from other callers who may want to raise issues. The COVID-19 monitoring unit, which has been set up by the government of Barbados, has been in the field. I made the comments about the zero tolerance approach. I believe it was 2 days ago. The COVID-19 monitoring unit was in the field yesterday and will be in the field or is in the field again today. We are not in an exercise of trying to name and shame and publicly mark anybody for breaching of protocols or for being shut down. but action has already been taken by the COVID-19 monitoring unit in respect of the observation of those protocols, and that action will continue to be taken today. The public may not necessarily see or know if a business has been closed, if a minibus has been pulled off the road and told to disembark all of the passengers and go home and not come back until you're prepared to comply. But those actions are being and will be taken over the course of the next couple of days.
What's the next step in all of this now, Mr. Carter?
In respect of what?
The overall approach to the fight. I mean, it's changed because we, in the early stages, we had 4 or 5 cases a day. Now we were able to bring it under control. Now we're at a point where we are trying to reopen the economy. And obviously the protocols have been changing from time to time. It's pretty dynamic. So where are we now?
Okay, so protocols will change as the knowledge of the epidemic and knowledge of transmission and the science evolves. This is a new virus. We are still learning things about it. We are still learning things about transmission. And that is where you have seen changes and an evolution of the policy. As Dr. Earwood hinted at, although he did not say so explicitly, many of the what might have been perceived as inconsistencies or changes, many of those things have been in response to the information and the science that we've been gathering. In terms of the next steps, the critical next steps are actually a refinement of the protocols that are currently in place in respect of international travel. And I know that there's been a lot of public comment about those protocols. But again, those protocols are very clear. On entering Barbados is required to either present a negative PCR, which is the gold standard PCR test, which then is validated by the government of Barbados, its public health officials, or to undergo a test at the airport or at a designated site and to await the results, for those results to be negative before they're allowed to proceed. If persons refuse to take the tests or do not want to take the tests, they will not be allowed to enter Barbados. If persons are citizens and they refuse to take the tests, those persons will be quarantined at a government facility. So that is very clear in relation to the protection that the government is seeking to provide to the people of Barbados, its citizens and its visitors, in respect of the reopening of commercial air traffic. No exceptions are to be made. And I heard the Minister of Health speaking about the fact that even persons who have diplomatic status have been made to comply with the law of Barbados because it is the law. The fact is, David, that and Barbados, that we have not had a case of local transmission of COVID-19 for perhaps the better part of 6 or 7 weeks. So you probably have to go back into May to see our latest case or last documented case of local transmission. But we have had a number of imported cases. However, I have cautioned Barbadians every time that I've spoken that because there are large numbers of asymptomatic persons with COVID-19, it is not beyond the realm of possibility that there are persons around you who have COVID-19, who have not been tested and not been determined so to have, but who may well be infected and who can possibly infect others. This is the rationale and the reasoning behind the continued or the need for continued scrupulous observance of protocols. The fact that persons may be COVID-19 positive, asymptomatic, and walking around.
Against that background, therefore, answer this question. 2 relaxed days, is this one of the new norms, having relaxed days during a pandemic? Or is it not a pandemic here in Barbados? Please ask the Czar if permission is going to be given for the more than 500 persons to walk up or gather on those days, along with some even at Paradise Beach. There's some talk of some special.
Yeah, if you strip away the hyperbole around that comment, the fact is that Barbados has 2 days coming up of immense cultural significance. One is the Day of National Significance, July 26. One is Emancipation Day, August 1st. Now, those 2 days, permission can be sought. Notice carefully, permission can be sought from the COVID-19 monitoring unit to hold an event of more than 500 persons. That permission has to be sought and given. I know, for example, that there is a mass observance that we normally have on August 1st to mark emancipation. There's normally a march that happens and an event at Bassa. I know there's normally an event also typically held in Golden Square. I'm not sure what the plans are currently, but that event to mark the 1937 riots, disturbances, however you want to characterize it. The permission that can be sought and given for more than 500 persons together will require the observation of all of the social or physical distancing protocols and all of the other applicable protocols. So essentially, all that is being done is to provide the scope for Barbadians to observe these 2 days of significance with whatever means they choose to, with the approval of the government of Barbados and in observation of the protocols that are set out.
Let's take another call. Good morning.
Top of the day to you.
Yes, morning.
Morning.
Let me first congratulate the government on what appears to be an achievement. And let me now ask one or two questions that have concerned me. There was a time when we were using the alphabet system to do our shopping and other things. And the Czar just came out and during an interview suggested that somebody put an idea to him and he just implemented it on the spot. And this was the idea that people like me with a hyphenated name will have the last name of the hyphenation as the operative letter to go by. Now, if anybody wanted to make contact with me and went to the telephone directory, if they use my last name, they would never find me. What I would like to know is, what was the rationale for changing what has been an age-long idea that the first name of the hyphenation is the one that is applicable? I would like to find that one out. The other thing I would like to ask is this. People like me have certain problems shopping on certain days. Now, my day is Sunday. I do not like shopping on Sundays because I regard it as my Sabbath. There are others who, on Saturdays, do not shop or will not shop because they regard that as their Sabbath. What was the problem when the suggestion was made that there is no respect for those who observe some religious thinking and do not shop on certain days? Why was that not adhered to?
You've been dropping out. Sorry about that. I think you've had enough. You've heard enough to be able to answer these two questions. Yes, go ahead.
I will take the two questions. First of all, the hyphenated name and why we chose to use the one or other of the hyphenated names. Now, obviously, we had to choose one or the other. The fact is that most persons who have a hyphenated name, a large proportion of them, adopt that hyphen after they've become married. And it made sense, therefore, if we are using the principle of one person per household, to choose that latter bit of the hyphenated name that is added when persons have become married. There was no discrimination in respect of a particular individual. I saw a letter written by, and I think, believe signed by Mr. Gibstate. I'm not sure if this is him that is speaking, basically indicating that he was offended by the fact. Now, he was not discriminated against because he could have gone and shopped on, we are not changing his designation, he could have gone and shopped on the day of his last name, and there were 2 days afforded for shopping, just like there were for everybody else, regardless of whether they had a double barrel name or not. In respect of his second question about no respect for religious days, it is a fact that some people observe the Sabbath on Saturday, and some people observe Sunday as a holy day that they don't want to do things like shopping and so on. The fact is that there were 2 days allocated every week for every individual. So if one of your days happened to fall on the Sabbath, then you had another day available to you to shop. So again, yes, they might have been the persons who were inconvenienced in the sense that they would not therefore have had 2 days available, but they always had that additional day available to shop.
Let's take another call. Hello. Good morning. You're on the air. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, morning.
Good morning to your guests. And this question is for Azar. There are persons in jail for breaking the curfew. Some had to pay a half of money, a lot of money. Right, Azar?
Yes, I believe so.
Yes. The two businesses that brought the protocol over the weekend, will they be charged? Because you can't have one law for one law for the next. And then they not have the ones that brought the curfew, they not have no final notice. So I want to know if those two businesses will be charged because they brought the protocols. And my other question is, all the businesses that returning back home, it's only them that bring home the virus, and some that returning and all that coming in now will all be Beijing. Zara, you hear me?
I believe so. Yes.
Yes, I'm hearing the questions.
Yes.
So
okay,
those are the two questions that she's got.
All right. First of all, I'm not sure which two businesses the caller is referring to, because from my observation, there were dozens of businesses ranging from rum shops to persons who are selling food from their house, right up to mass events that were held that broke the protocols.
I'm sure they're looking at the cliff, though.
I'm not sure who anybody is looking at unless they specifically state so. So I'm saying that from my own observation, there were businesses ranging from a 2x4 at the corner of a village right up to the maximum large facilities that broke the protocols over the weekend. And there's no distinction between them in terms of their requirement for observation of the protocols. They all broke the protocols. Secondly,
no, but before you go on to that, a critical question she has posed is, in light of what has happened to individuals, what will happen to the businesses that have breached the law in this regard? Whether you say, you know, that dozens of businesses did it. So if that is the case, people like her would want to see what action is being taken in those circumstances.
Yes. And so where the law obviously has to apply and be applied, I'm not obviously privy to what the law courts do, but if businesses have been reported, have been found to be in breach, either by the COVID-19 monitoring unit or by law enforcement officers, then I would expect the process of action by the courts to be taken in respect of those businesses. I don't determine what action is taken by the Court of Barbados. That is in the full discretion of the judiciary or the magistracy that is responsible for application of penalties in respect of breaches of the law. The second question about Beijing's or non-Bajans bringing in the virus. The virus obviously does not discriminate by nationality. The fact is, of the cases, as far as I am aware, that have recently come in with COVID-19 have been Barbadians repatriating. We have not had a case. Again, normally the nationality is presented when this information is made public. We have not had a case, as far as I am aware, of persons coming in since we have started the opening of commercial flights of a tourist or a non-Barbadian coming in with COVID-19. Let me say also, because I saw some really interesting comments, and I use the word interesting in heavy inverted commas, interesting comments about who has been infecting whom. Again, the facts are that we do not have a single documented case of a Barbadian having been infected by a visitor to Barbados. We have had all visitors who have tested positive in the early days of the pandemic, but we do not have any evidence of a single case of a Barbadian being infected by a visitor with COVID-19.
Ronnie Yearwood.
So there's just one issue. Well, there are two things here, but I just want to focus on the first one that the caller, I think, was alluding to, and I'm not presuming to be in the caller's mind, but I think the caller was getting at, and David, you could correct me, discrepancy in the application, as they see it, of the law, say, to smaller persons or persons who may not have adequate resources to be before the courts, and persons who they perceive as having large resources and the law not being applied equally across the board. That's what I gathered from the point the caller was trying to make.
Two Barbadoses, that's what is being pushed in some quarters.
So that is a particular narrative that I see there. I guess the question to the czar, and perhaps slightly unfair to him, but at the same point, he is here before us. I guess the question the public wants to know is how are they going to manage that perception in terms of the application or the disapplication of the law? I get the point that obviously the czar is not the courts of law and they're two separate systems, but if there's a perception, and this goes back to the first question and the first idea that we were talking about in terms of how people view policy, because often we make policy, we think about it, but the application, when it hits the ground, to the interpretation and how people respond to it, can be very different to what was conceptualized. So if there's a perception that there are these two Barbadoses, that one set of rules are applied to one set of people, another set of rules to another set of people, how then does the czar and his team respond to that in trying to enforce as best as they can the protocols for COVID, because it obviously will make your job difficult, but how do you overcome that difficulty in trying to ensure that that perception fades away and that there's proper application of the law across the board?
The answer to that, Dr. Yearwood, is the fear and blind application of the law and the protocols. Now, I said just now that there were dozens of businesses. And you just go out there, you will see it for yourself, dozens of businesses that are in breach of the protocol. If the caller is of the perception, and it's a very convenient narrative to go and throw out into the public of Barbados, if the caller is of the perception, or you yourself, that we have applied different rules or principles to the small business in the village, as compared to the big business in the Heights, well, what is the evidence of that? Where have you seen someone who is operating a rum shop and letting people come in without masks, or operating a village shop? Where have you seen that person charged over the last 2 days, whereas a larger business has not been? Where is the evidence? So if you're trying to create the impression or the perception that there is a dual application of the law, where is the evidence of that dual application of the law? It cannot simply exist in your own head. I haven't seen any evidence of it. I will be happy to see the evidence because I would have a principled position to take in relation to my own position as the czar in relation to COVID-19 if that application was as people are saying.
See, you have an interesting point when you say no business, no action has been taken against any business.
I didn't say that. I said I asked persons to bring the evidence where you have seen
a
business.
We haven't seen it. But what we have seen is individuals, action taken against individuals. And in those circumstances, the question would stand, how is it that you can treat the individual this way for breaches, but businesses, and you know, whether they are big or small businesses, as you said, it is outside of the scope of what you can do. But I do accept the view that it comes across to people as though, you know, depending upon who you are and what you're doing, it's a different approach. And that's the point that has been made here by Dr. Yewa. The perception, it can undermine public policy in that regard.
I accept that, David, and I don't want to, you know, turn this into a debate because I'm not trying to be defensive by any means. But the only persons that I have seen being brought before the court have been for breaches of curfew. Breach of a curfew is done by an individual. And in fact, there were several instances where people were in breach of the curfew as it existed then, who were essentially given a warning and so on. We have seen people, however, out at 2 o'clock in the morning in people's property trying to claim some legitimate action that they were taking and trying to defend that in terms of a court of law while they were in a person's property at 2 o'clock in the morning when you have a curfew that exists from 10 p.m. The only persons I've seen brought before the court have been in respect of the breach of the curfew. That is done by individuals, not by businesses. Bring the evidence of any business that has been subject of a dual application of the law. Let me deal with it.
Down to brass tacks. Let's take another call. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning to the Mr. Czars, Mr. Carter, and the other gentleman that's in the studio with
Doctor,
you.
Dr. Yearwood.
Dr.
Morning.
Yearwood. Morning. Morning. I want to say to Mr. Carter, I am 100% agree with him on all the things that he's been trying to do. I think that Barbadians need to understand that this is a very, very serious virus that we are dealing with. And we're not even sure how to handle it. And I don't want him to feel any way down. I agree with that lady, that her comments and what she made. I agree with her 100%. There are a few things that he could treat, but Carter, please don't feel in any way let down because you're doing a wonderful, wonderful job. And Barbadians need to realize that you're protecting us. And that's what I have to say. Thank you and
all
goodbye.
Right, thanks for calling. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, morning.
How are you? Two questions. You know, one of the things that I want to ask, probably I can get the answers because the czar is there. Everybody's congratulating the czar. Everybody's saying this and saying that about the czar. Yeah, all right. Two Barbadoses. I want to know how it is that you have these activities that the czar spoke immediately after the news. You had another government agency talking about crop over and emancipation there. I want to ask this question, and then I come up with the other question. On election day, you prohibit the sale of alcohol. So alcohol, as you and I know, is a driver of a lot of things that have been happening in Barbados. Would it be possible for these two holidays that are coming up that no sale of alcohol would be permitted? Hello.
The answer to your question is I don't know. The answer to your question is yes, it is possible. But The current protocols by the government of Barbados allow for the sale of alcohol. There was a point when it was not allowed, but the current protocols allow for the sale of alcohol. And I do not expect that those protocols in respect of the allowance of the sale of alcohol will be reversed for those particular 2 days. But it is possible.
Are the continuations, a second question. I do believe that that is an important aspect of it that would assist in your control, because I don't think that your committee has enough people to police the whole concept of what is happening in these two Barbadoses. The other question, Strip, one of the things you have implemented that I am very comfortable with, but it's not expanded. You're talking about the hand washing. You're talking about the gun. And one of the things that you're not projecting is the contact advancing. Like you have in a book where people sign in that book, which would mean that if there's anything happening that right from that location, there's contact tracing. What has happened to that concept? That concept does not exist any longer. I believe that that is an area. I was very proud when I walked into the store the other day, and the gentleman said, that, excuse me, before we serve you, can you sign this book or your ID card? But that is not promoted, so I want to hear from Desire. You've got all of this.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Let's hear from Desire. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, caller. Contact tracing is still, or the sign-in when you go into business places or to go to church, that is still being encouraged. It is still being required in some places as well, because that allows for you to be able to rapidly identify persons who may have been exposed if there is a positive case. And we continue to do contact tracing. One quick comment, David. A couple of persons have spoken about my role. Just let me make it clear that a lot of the credit for what has happened in relation to the COVID-19 response in Barbados does not go to Richard Carter Desire, because I am essentially a spokesperson and an advisor on some policy matters to the government of Barbados. The credit goes to the dozens of healthcare workers, public health workers, and other persons who are working behind the scenes doing this job. I know for a fact that persons went through working 16-hour days at the start of this pandemic. I know that there are a number of brave nurses who put up their hands when other persons were running away and refusing to treat persons who may be possibly COVID-19 positive, and their courage and so on will be identified and rewarded at the appropriate time. So yes, while I have the public face of the government, much of the credit and so on does not go to me, and I do not accept that credit because it has not been my role.
What is your role as Czar? What specifically do you do, and how has that changed since March or so?
So my role is essentially an advisor to the government in relation to the COVID-19 response, because the COVID-19 response has required a whole of government response. So yes, a lot of people focus on the public health element of what has been done, but there are lots of other things that are happening. This morning, for example, we are overseeing the distribution of non-conditional cash transfers to persons who have been, whose personal lives and livelihoods have been disrupted by COVID-19. That is being managed under the COVID-19 unit that I'm responsible for. And we have so far distributed support to over 3,000 persons under that program. Similarly, we have been at the forefront of reaching out to elderly persons in Barbados who might have been in circumstances where they could have been affected. We've launched a mental health response to COVID-19 for those persons who might have suffered mental health consequences of being locked down. There's a lot that is happening behind the scenes that the public is not aware of. And aside from the advice that I give to the government of Barbados, I am also responsible, as you would have seen and would have noted, as being part of government's public communicator and the face of government. I believe you were present when I was introduced to the media of Barbados by the Prime Minister and the Cabinet. And at that time, the Prime Minister indicated his responsibility will be to get up every day and to work on COVID-19 and to be the face of government and the communicator of government in respect of COVID-19. Finally, David, this is not something new that I've done, because if you go back 20 years, you would find me being a member of another pandemic response group in Barbados. So I serve as on the National HIV/AIDS Commission for a number of years. Again, doing a very similar job to this, public communication, public research, public advice in relation to our treatment of the HIV/AIDS pandemic.
Here's a bit of information on something that is evolving and important. There's weather information statement number 4A on Tropical Storm Gonzalo for Barbados. The Barbados Meteorological Services is closely monitoring the progress of recently upgraded Tropical Depression number 7 to Tropical Storm Gonzalo, located near 9.9 degrees north, 43.1 degrees west, or about 850 a.m. This is about 1,830 kilometers or 1,135 miles to the east of Barbados. This system is moving towards the west northwest at 12 miles per hour or 19 kilometers per hour. A generally westward motion at a faster forward speed is expected during the next few days. Maximum sustained winds have increased to 45 miles per hour or 75 kilometers per hour. Convection around the core has become more asymmetric this morning. Despite this, the system has become better defined within the past few hours. This is evident by the improvement in the banding to the north and west of the system. At the moment, environmental conditions are not conducive for rapid intensification of the system. However, as the system tracks westward across the central Atlantic, some additional strengthening is still possible, and a tropical storm watch may be issued for Barbados from 11 p.m. Wednesday, July 22nd, 2020, or sooner if conditions warrant. This is Down to Brass Tacks. We have with us COVID Czar Richard Carter with us up until just about 10 o'clock. He's devoted an hour to be with us. If he has any more time, I'm sure you would not regret having him here a bit longer. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air. Take another call, 434-1790.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm just curious to know if there is a different protocol for people coming in from high-risk countries on port of entry?
The answer is yes. The public health officials make a differentiation or distinction on risk of country. That risk is driven by and assessed on the basis of, one, the 7-day totals of COVID-19 and the transmission classification according to the World Health Organization. So those are the two principles on which countries are assigned to three categories of risk. One, low risk. Secondly, medium risk, and thirdly, high risk. And there's a list of countries, and some of the obvious ones for us in terms of high risk will be the USA, Brazil, India, Mexico, Argentina, and so on. Those are countries where the pandemic is out of control. In terms of the differentiation of the protocol, the difference is that anybody coming from a high risk country, they are treated differently in terms of the application of the protocol. They are required not simply to have a negative PCR test on arrival or be tested on arrival, but they are also tested again within 7 days of arrival because of the fact that of having come from a high-risk country. Whereas persons coming from low-risk countries are allowed, once they have a negative test, to exit the airport once they've satisfied port health officials. Finally, just to say, the government of Barbados does have the right, and it is so in the protocol, to test anyone at any time during their presence in Barbados based on the assessment of risk. David, I heard a caller on one of your earlier programs commenting on someone traveling from St. Vincent who was, in the view of the caller, treated differently. That caller is not privy to the public health examination that that person was subjected to and a determination of the risk profile of that individual. And until such time as that public health assessment is done by the public health officials, no one can claim discrimination or differential treatment, because the treatment will be on the basis of the assessment of risk by the public health officials.
This person writes, although I'm a fan of the Minister of Culture, I was very disappointed in his announcement of a planned Kadoumat-like event in early August and a loosening of the protocol for the amount of people that can gather in one place to be in excess of 500 persons. This Kadoumat-like event is supposed to have costumes and the like. It is unnecessary. Is coronavirus taking a holiday, David? We've already been told that the festival is off this year. If it is off, it is off. Leave it at that. That announcement is sending the wrong message. Any comment, Dr. Yearwood?
I guess, David, this, and it's interesting how all of these questions and comments connect back to the first caller and the way that you opened the show in terms of policy and perception and mixed messaging. And I guess it would be here that the SAR would have to make an answer in terms of the application of policy across the board, because it has to be, there has to be an even tone. And the contributor, I guess, does have a fair point. The festival was canceled. Persons had come to that expectation that there was going to be no crop over. It would be, I think, here for the SAR to respond. How do you envisage that such events could be managed in light of the nature of how COVID spreads, et cetera, and the fact that protocols typically, there are 500 people per event, if I recall. Obviously, you've mentioned that you can have exceptions and you apply for the application. But, COVID doesn't necessarily choose a number, like, I'm going to infect 100 people because it's a 100 crowd event, or 500 or 1,000. The fact is public gatherings of large numbers of persons are problematic one way or the other. Well, crop over, whatever the event is.
As we've heard from the Czar, that's a decision that the public health officials have to make. And Barbadians will wait to see what decision they are going to take in these circumstances. I suspect that, given the comment, it would not be politic for me to put that to the Czar any further, because he's already spoken to this particular matter. But there are people who are looking on and are... I mean, the truth is, you all have done such a good job, Czar, of raising consciousness about this issue, that it can come back to haunt you if it appears as though there's a contradiction in what is being said to Barbadians about how they should deal with this. Do you accept that?
I fully accept that, David. I fully accept that the consequences of one single infection from any event that is under the auspices of the government of Barbados would have negative and significant consequences for the legitimacy and so on of the COVID-19 response. So I fully accept that. I obviously am not making public policy, and the Minister of Culture, Minister responsible for culture, I imagine that you can invite him to explain the rationale behind the decision that has been taken. As you indicated, however, any event that is organized is to be organized following the public health advice that has been given consistently by the the public health authorities. And therefore, if there is to be a Kaduma-like event, I expect that, and held off under the auspices of the government, I expect that that event will first have...
I think we've lost communication there.
Consistent with the application of those protocols.
Somebody wants to know what's the information. They say that the information about aircraft being allowed into Barbados has been changing frequently, and they are therefore unsure of what is the latest policy. Can you spell that out for them? Hello?
Yes, hello? Just confirming. I still hear you, David.
Yes, you. Can you spell that out for the person? What is the current policy?
Which policy? Sorry.
As it relates to aircraft coming into Barbados. You see, the information has been changing a lot. And therefore, they're a bit confused. So they want you to, you know, clarify for them, if you can.
Okay, so the information has been changing and evolving because, as I said, information and the trajectory of the pandemic itself has been evolving. So if we were having this conversation perhaps 4 weeks ago, we may not be discussing the fact of suspending JetBlue flights and American Airlines flights out of the United States of America, because we have seen a recent resurgence of the pandemic there. So because what is happening in respect of the pandemic is evolving, the protocols also need to evolve. The current situation is that everyone entering Barbados is required to have a negative PCR COVID-19 test. And that, if you fail to present a test, then you will be tested at the airport. And the differentiation is made between high-risk countries and those countries that are considered medium or low risk. And that differentiation is that persons coming from a high-risk country, such as the USA, will be required to have a second test. I have also heard the concern expressed that persons may be using medium-risk countries in order to get into Barbados, that is, traveling from places that are high-risk. If your journey originates in one of those high-risk countries, or you have been in one of those countries within the last 21 days, the same protocols and principles will apply to you, even though you may have journeyed through a country that is medium risk. So to take an example, someone traveling from the USA, from Florida, for example, driving up or flying up to New York or to Canada to get into Barbados, that person would have been in one of those high-risk countries in the past 21 days, and therefore will be treated as having come from one of those countries in the application of the protocols.
Can we take another call? How much more time do you have with us, Mr. Carter?
Okay, I've now given the hour, but I will stay on for another 10 minutes or so until 11:15.
Okay, thank you. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Yes, good morning. In regards to the CS mask, I listen to World Health Organizations, and they mention many times that it's unnecessary to wear a CS mask. So did Dr. Fauci, the highly respected scientist in America, and Surgeon General. They mentioned that wearing a face mask is of no use.
When did you hear Dr. Fauci on that last?
I may even have recorded videos of Dr. Fauci.
Dr. Fauci said so in the early stages.
Yeah, he said so in the early stages.
But that's not what he's saying now?
So did the World Health Organization, so did the Surgeon General of America say that face mask, and there was studies done, extensive studies done in 2014, 17, and 19, where they say that even in 95, face masks do not stop viruses, cannot prevent viruses. And when it was asked the evidence to produce where the face mask has stopped viruses, there's no evidence, but there's strong evidence showing that it cannot stop viruses. And that's the N95. As regards to the regular cloth mask, it's zero protection.
Okay.
And this is from professionals that I heard from, and also scientists that I heard from.
Okay. Well, let Mr. Carter say what the public health officials have been telling him in Barbados.
The evidence on face masks has been evolving over time, and as the caller and you yourself indicated, that evidence has led us to very different places now in terms of the risk and the protective value associated with face masks. While a face mask does not, and I'm not a scientist, but I've listened to all of the public health officials, while the face mask will not necessarily stop a virus because it is obviously so small, what it certainly does stop is the respiratory droplets, of particularly of a certain size, because it is those respiratory droplets that will contain the virus. So the face mask will certainly stop that, or stop some of that, and it will stop you expelling and give some protective value to you inhaling if it is properly worn. There is, even if it offers marginal protection, and there are a number of studies that have shown one thing and a number of studies that have shown the other. Even if it offers marginal protection, particularly where physical distancing cannot be observed, and this is the important point that the Barbados public health officials have been emphasizing, where we cannot observe physical distancing, the recommendation is to wear face masks. Therefore, on places like minibuses, therefore in public places and so on. That is where the evidence has led us.
Okay. Down to brass tacks. One more call. Hello. You're on the air. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Hi.
And your guest. I got not a question, I got a statement to the Czar. We know that you say that you all listen to advisory from other people, but for me, we protecting Barbados. And for other countries that the virus has been killing and spreading rapidly, I mean, I know that we all want to protect us. For the face masks, all of us should be wearing face masks. If it is protocol, we do it to protect ourselves. Yes, I know, as Zara said, there are other people out there that you see cruises and things all know that give a care about a face mask, which before we are protecting ourselves, so we need it. And for me, every measure should be put in place to protect our people, regardless of ignorance, because that's most some people just move in the ignorance of things and what they hear and what they perceive things to be. The dangers are out there. It is relevantly seen that, you know, COVID-19 is a serial killer, regardless of color, race, class, if you're in poverty or not. So, if for me, every protocol should be made mandatory, not voluntary. Because if you don't make it mandatory, people will always find a loophole. Yes, sometimes the mask will be uncomfortable, but we need to put it on. A seatbelt used to be uncomfortable, but when it was made law, everybody just put on the seatbelt now.
So out of all of this, you believe that the wearing of the face mask should be made mandatory? If so, that and what else?
Every precaution that you will have to do, even with the businesses, make it mandatory that them follow every protocol, because the least slip we will have will cause an infection. Yes, people will say that the letting in people into Barbados, but at least make sure that every protocol, because when you cast doubt in people, they were always, oh, well, you letting a man that got COVID-19 into Barbados, but make sure that every protocol is followed.
Mr. Carter, how challenging is it to go in the direction of making all of these protocols, as he sees it, mandatory? Are you there? If you're hearing me, you have a situation here where somebody also says you are the advisor to government on COVID matters. And they're saying you should be strongly against any policy or event that puts Bajans at risk. And that is instead of trying to scare or bully us. This is what the person says, this is how they interpret what they're hearing, whether it be a fete, parade, kadumut, even letting anyone on a flight without a test, which I am strongly against, says the writer. That person is putting everyone who had their test done at risk, and this should never happen. Ms. Carter, are you there? I think we've lost that call, our connection with him. He did say that he had up until a quarter past, and if he comes back, then we'll get a closing comment. But this is down to brass tacks. I'm with you, and so is Dr. Ronnie Yearwood, who is on the line with us via Zoom.